From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Another brand new episode of the Craig Needles Podcast, our first of 2022. And we start 2022 off on a not particularly great note. You would have heard from the Premier of Ontario yesterday, Doug Ford, that we are not going back to school until the 17th of January. We are back into modified step two, so no indoor dining, all sorts of other rules of change as far as what people in the province of Ontario can do in the face of what is going on with the Omicron variant, which is producing thousands and thousands of cases per day. How many? Well, I have no idea. Neither do you, and neither does anybody else, because there's a lack of testing going on and a whole bunch of other difficult things. So to talk about that with us today is Kate Graham, who is joining us on the podcast from home. We'll explain what's going on with that in a second. Kate is a former Ontario Liberal leadership candidate and a candidate for the London North Centre riding in the upcoming election, which I'm used to saying the election is next year, but it is now this year. Kate, hello. Thank you for doing this.
Good morning and Happy New Year,
I guess. Happy New Year to you, I guess. We'll talk about whether it's happy or not, I guess, right now. But your reaction to what we got from the Premier yesterday, this is something that obviously could have been announced for the sake of parents perhaps last week, as opposed to just saying, hey, we're going to start Wednesday, a bunch of other stuff. But as you were watching, what were the thoughts going through your head?
So, yeah, I think like lots of parents yesterday just felt very let down. I'm not alone in feeling done. Like, this pandemic's been going on for so long and people are so tired and they've been doing what they can. And to have the Premier of Ontario come out after, you know, being silent since December the 17th and announcing, you know, with 48 hours notice, what's a very dramatic change for parents, for students, for educators who are parents. It just felt really disrespectful. And like, I will be honest, at moments, tears streaming down my cheeks, thinking, what on earth have we done and what a mess we've gotten into as a province?
Yeah, it's bad on a lot of different levels. Yeah. I'm of the belief that school obviously should be the most important thing, the thing that we protect the most as far as what we make sure people are able to do in person. And was the opportunity for that this week? I've seen medical experts whose opinions differ on whether we needed to close schools this week. And I've seen more differentiation on that than I have any other time in the pandemic as far as the decisions that have been made or have not been made. However, I don't think there should be any debate as to whether schools could have been more likely to stay open if we had made some smart choices in the summer when it comes to HEPA filters, when it comes to ordering masks, some smart choices in the fall when it comes to boosting teachers and making them a priority. We didn't do those things. And now here's a situation we're in.
Totally. Yeah. So I'm involved as a volunteer with the Ontario Liberal Party's platform work. We put out a safe return to schools and learning plan in August of 2020. And it was based on all of the best expertise we had at the time. We've put out plans throughout each wave of the pandemic. And to hear the Premier stand up and say, well, we need two more weeks to do, you know, A, B, C, D, things that we've been talking about for months and months. Again, it was just so disappointing because there was nothing really new. There was no, you know, radical improvements to safety. It was just things that people have been, frankly, begging for a long, long time. Not good enough.
No. And it leads me to this question. We say, hey, we'll be back in school on the 17th of January. That remains to be seen, I suppose. And there's some question as to whether this Omicron explosion that we've had is going to start dipping and going further down. What should be happening in the next 2 weeks? So the Premier was asked that question multiple times and didn't really answer it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, making good use of the next 2 weeks, really prioritizing, you know, rolling out boosters and so on for education workers. Obviously, the safety within schools and childcare should be top priority. But I think what people are looking for, you know, not more than that, but at the same level, is clarity on what is ahead. So, you know, I teach at Huron Western. The universities co-signed a letter in December saying we've made a decision that we will be moving to mostly virtual until January 31st. Yesterday, after the announcement, another email came out that said, we will make a decision the week of January 10th if something is changing for February. And, you know, To me, that is leadership right now. That is, you know, they don't have all the information. You know, we don't know what things will look like in February, but being clear with people and respecting that these decisions have huge impacts on educators, on students, on families. And so we're going to be clear with you about how we're making the decisions that we are, so you can know what to expect. It feels like the opposite of what we're getting from the premier right now, which is like they went out of their way last week to announce that schools would be open. And then with basically nothing new happening in the meantime, they did an about face, and it has a huge impact. And it's a time where, as I said, you know, I'm feeling done. And I think a lot of people are really stressed out. They're at the end of their rope. They're doing what they can. And to not have leaders who have the basic decency of just communicating clearly, laying out their plans and making decisions that are well-informed by the people they would affect. It's not good enough. We deserve better.
What should this week have sounded like then? What would you have wanted to hear from, if not this premier, another premier, as far as here's our Omicron situation, here's what we're doing?
So I would have been happy if Doug Ford came out and was honest and said, listen, here are the things that have changed. And so we are doing the following, and here is what you can expect over the next 2 weeks. And it should include things like we are going to prioritize the vaccination rollout. We're going to prioritize testing. We are going to have the most aggressive, you know, plan to make classrooms safer. The Ontario Liberal Party, we've been calling for cap class sizes to keep the cohort smaller, again, since August of 2020. So it would include paid sick days. There's a whole long list now of things that are fairly well established. They've been being talked about for years. And I think if the premier came out and said, listen, this has gotten out of control, we know we should have done this in advance, and here are the very specific things that you can expect from us for the next 2 weeks, and here's when we're going to tell you more about what the term looks like ahead, instead of, you know, we don't know, we might tell you later, we're going to announce an announcement. Like, all of that needs to end. We're too far into this to not have leaders who can speak clearly about what they are going to do with the time that they've got. We don't need new ideas. The ideas are all out there. They've been well documented. Experts have been very, very clear. We need leaders who are listening to those experts and very aggressively implementing what they're recommending.
And we're not listening to experts on a few different levels. And this goes back to March of 2020, as far as the not listening to experts again. And I don't know if you felt the same way just when you look through the different experts online, virologists, doctors and whatnot. I feel as though the experts, I don't know if split is the right word, but there are a lot of differing opinions now, more so than other times during the pandemic. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I think there are sometimes sort of the same what we should be doing and some slightly different hows. But, yeah, you know, I haven't seen a lot of divergence of opinion on that, you know, childcare, for example, should be considered essential, and that, you know, people who are taking care of kids should be eligible for testing right now. They should be prioritized for getting their booster shots. I haven't seen many people disagreeing that paid sick days is like an absolute no-brainer that should have been in place throughout this entire time. Mm-hmm. So on some of the big things, you know, I think there's been a fair bit of consistency. And again, to have provincial leaders who are not listening to that, and even this late in the game, not willing to do the things that it will take to get us through this, it's unforgivable to me.
Now, federally, they've come out with some plans as far as helping those who need to stay home with kids because they're not in school. And I think it's $400-something a week, or those who aren't able to work because of some of the announcements that have happened here. But at the same time, some of those federal plans take a little bit longer to come into action. You don't get the money in your account right away. There are people who need that money to do things like pay rent and buy groceries. So what should the province be doing for people who are staying home from work because they've got to look after their kids?
Yeah, I know. And again, this is maybe going to sound more partisan than I intended to, but I think when you look at how our federalism is set up, you know, the federal government has stepped up repeatedly with, you know, very significant dollars. You know, they're really putting their money where their mouth is on making these programs available. But a lot of the decisions that, you know, affect the day-to-day lives of people are provincial. You know, childcare, healthcare, education, things like, you know, whether or not we pay for paid sick days, you know, the employment standards, the conditions of work that people are experiencing right now. All of those things, they come down to the decisions and political will of our provincial government. So for me, the real failing has not been at a federal level. It's been in Ontario. And, you know, there are 13 jurisdictions within Canada, and you can see that there are different impacts of the decisions that are being made. You know, other jurisdictions have prioritized things that we haven't. and it's paid off. So yeah, for me, the real failing here has been squarely in the hands of the Ford government.
Let's talk about your situation. You put out a Twitter thread about it earlier in the day.
I've had a long day here already, yeah. And it's only 11 o'clock in the morning.
I understand.
I'm tired.
I understand. And for people who are listening who have not seen the thread, I will read the very first tweet of it. Then you and I can get into sort of what's going on here. We have a very sick toddler. We cannot get her tested for COVID because she's not considered high priority in Ontario. She's not old enough to be vaccinated. Ford Nation has decided that an unvaccinated, symptomatic 16-month-old in childcare is not a priority. This is wrong. Not a good situation. I hope your daughter is doing okay. But at the same time, I'm sure that there are thousands of parents in Ontario who are in not dissimilar situations to the one you're in right now.
Yeah. So she's been sick for a couple of days, and you know, she's 16 months old, so we're fairly new parents, or at least I don't know when I get to stop saying new, but I still feel new each time something like this happens. And, you know, she's had a fever that just keeps going up and up and up, and we couldn't get it down, everything that we're trying. And, you know, all of the other symptoms on the list too. And we want to get her tested to see if it's COVID. And so we took her into Emerge, especially when the fever got over 40 degrees Celsius. And we were told, and we could hear other families being told the same thing, that, you know, because of the new provincial rules, she does not qualify as being high priority. She's not a high priority, and so we're not doing tests. And this is a part of the decision to no longer test or report the cases, especially among, you know, she's not old enough to be vaccinated. So she's an unvaccinated kid in childcare. We don't know how many kids have COVID in childcare. We don't know how many kids will have COVID in schools because they've decided that they don't want that information anymore. And, you know, maybe it's because I've been, you know, up every 3 hours administering Tylenol and so on to a toddler and trying to do our best here. I'm exhausted, but it is totally enraging and unacceptable to me that we have made a policy decision that kids are not a priority, that, you know, families are not a priority because we can't get tested. It means we're all in isolation. We're in day three of having not left our house, you know, and I'm in a privileged spot. I can teach online. My partner can work online. And so, you know, but if we had jobs that we weren't getting paid, if we didn't show up to, like, it would be an absolute disaster to not know if she had COVID or not. And the direction is just assume that she doesn't isolate until it's done. And you don't know how long that is, a minimum of 5 days. And so, yeah, it's been extremely frustrating. And I think, again, to go back to sort of a systems level, the decision that kids and the people who care for them are not a priority is unacceptable. You know, we are way too far into this, again, to be making really big mistakes like that. That was sort of seemed like a last minute, we're overwhelmed, we don't know what to do. So we've made some changes to testing. It was announced last week. People are really confused about what that means, including, you know, you can pop into the kids' emergency room at LHSC, which is a terrific resource, by the way, and the staff are amazing, but are overworked. There's not enough staff for the demand right now. They're doing their very best, but to make a change that says, you know, kids aren't a priority and we're not willing to test them and everybody should just go home and figure it out on your own, it's not good enough. So, yeah, so I think I put later on in the tweet, like, I'm full on, you know, you poke the mama bear, like, you know, the thing that we need, you know, she was able to get all kinds of other simple tests done at the hospital, but we couldn't get this one done on a virus that we know is just absolutely rampant. And it's because there isn't a political will to prioritize kids. And it's, at least for this mama bear, totally infuriating.
Now, they would say, hey, there just aren't enough tests to go around right now. And we're looking at prioritizing older populations for testing. Look, I don't know if I necessarily buy the latter half of that, but there are not a lot of tests to go around, and jurisdictions around the world are finding this out. So what do you think we should be doing with the tests that we have, in your opinion?
Yeah, no, I get that. I would put, you know, children who are not old enough to be vaccinated, who are symptomatic, education workers, there needs to be a higher access to testing. And I mean, speaking of other jurisdictions around the world, you know, you talk to somebody in Germany, for example. Tests have been freely available throughout the pandemic with an expectation that people are, you know, testing at home all the time. You know, you have to pay like a pretty penny on, you know, Kijiji or through a private medical provider right now to get a test if you don't have access to them otherwise. We've gotten into this mess because we have not prioritized the health of kids and of families. We haven't made testing a serious priority. And so, you know, I get that now we're overwhelmed and now we need to make tough decisions, but, you know, trying to rationalize that when you've got a very sick toddler in your arms and you are at the end of your rope and don't know what to do, I cannot make sense of it. And again, you're probably hearing the tiredness and I'm uncharacteristically angry today about all of this, but it feels like a colossal failing of leadership, and the cost is for families and for kids.
Well, I'll tell you what it's been like at my house. My daughter's 4 and she's in junior kindergarten. And we had to tell her yesterday, you know, Charlotte, there isn't going to be school for another 2 weeks. And she was devastated. I've never seen her cry quite like that. She was talking about how she wants to see her friends and just like, it's hard. And there's a lot of conversations happening like that. And for me, like, you know, she understands, like, oh yeah, there's a virus and the virus is going around. We don't want anyone else to get the virus. She understands that part, but it's just a lot of conversations that parents have had to have with kids that are really not a lot of fun. And that was really heartbreaking for me to sort of talk about that with her yesterday. I know a lot of people are really, you know, having a tough time here to start 2022.
You know, this has been so difficult, and especially I do not know how single parents are doing it. You know, so many people all across the province are having to do that with so little notice. It's a really unfortunate, it makes the tough situation that much harder.
Yeah, no, it's not what you want, put it that way. It's not what you want.
Exactly.
So over the next few weeks here, what do you hope to see then, do you think, Kate? What do we want to see? And obviously we want to see a situation where Omicron cases start to decline. We've seen in other jurisdictions and maybe we can sort of start adjusting things the other way here. But what do you want to see from a government perspective, from an education perspective over the next few weeks?
So I hope that we are really going to be serious about prioritizing learning spaces, as I said. We have 2 weeks now where things will be virtual. And so making sure that schools have, you know, just the basic things that we've been talking about throughout the pandemic, from better ventilation. I would like to see a commitment to smaller class sizes. I would like to see a commitment to supporting frontline workers who we know are already overwhelmed. So, you know, as I said, in August of 2020, we put out a plan that was I almost thought it was too detailed actually at the time. It had a board by board specific, here is how much we believe is needed to do things like cap class sizes, ensure paid sick days, providing mental health support, making sure there's enough PPE for everyone in these spaces, making sure that testing is available. You know, I hope that we take very good advantage of the time that we have. Well, we know that that the virus is, you know, in the medical officer of health's words, it will happen. This is we cannot at this point control the spread that we know is going to come over the next few weeks, but we can control what we do with this time. And so I hope we see very aggressive action and movement on things that, again, experts have been suggesting for a very long time. And for families, this is maybe less of a government thing, but, you know, I hope that people are taking care of themselves, taking care of each other. You know, the little things like reaching out and saying, can I, you know, pick up some groceries? If you know somebody who's in isolation, sending a text to check in on how people are doing. Even in my immediate circle, you know, I got lots of friends who are friends and family who are, you know, our parents, our educators, our nurses, our frontline workers, people are really struggling. And so I also hope that we take the month of January and really prioritize looking after ourselves and the people around us, because we need one another right now to be able to get through this, because it's a really tough time and it looks like we're in for a bumpy couple of weeks.
Yeah. I hope that February is better than January, because I don't think January is going to be any fun. But I don't know. And yeah. I do wonder sort of, and who knows what the answer to this is. Do we get into a situation with whatever the next variant is, or however this goes next? Like, what do we do? How does it look? And it's impossible to say right now, but it does kind of feel like, hey, we have this light at the end of the tunnel here sort of in September, October, and now all of a sudden things are getting pretty dark again. It's a tough juxtaposition, I think, for a lot of folks, that we kind of felt, hey, maybe we're getting out of this, and all of a sudden, not so much.
Agreed. If there's any one silver lining, I would agree. It feels harder, kind of feeling like we're back to the beginning again, but we have learned some things. Mm-hmm. There's been enough time to study this and understand what needs to be done. Again, we need to rely on our leaders to actually put those things into practice. But I hope we've also learned a few things about how we take care of each other as a community. You know, there's been, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was this real warmth of, you know, we support our healthcare workers, Things in Windows, all kinds of care community groups at the neighborhood level, looking after each other. And I think we need a real revival of that. I know everybody's tired, but that kind of warmth, and we're all in this together, even though, you know, same storm, different boats, but some sense of solidarity and taking care of one another, I felt was really strong at the beginning. And I think we're really going to need to find that in ourselves again to be able to push through what I hope is the final bit of this pandemic.
I think that's as good a spot as any to leave it. Kate, thank you so much for this and taking a few minutes out. And I know you're tired, and I appreciate you taking some time.
I know you are too. We all are.
There we go.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Craig. Really appreciate it. And take good care of your family.
Yeah, will do. Thanks, Kate.
Okay, bye.
That's Kate Graham, who, of course, is a former Ontario Liberal Party leadership candidate. Kate, of course, also running to be the next member of provincial parliament for London North Centre, joining us here on the Craig Needles podcast, getting her thoughts on everything we've seen so far this week. I wanted to get the nursing perspective too. We've got the parent perspective and a bit of the political perspective. Let's get the nursing perspective on what we've heard from the premier. And to do that, Doris Grinspun going to join us. She was on the podcast not long ago. She, of course, is the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, and she joins us once again to break down what this all means for nurses, what it means for our healthcare system. Doris, thank you so much for joining the Craig Needles podcast again. We're glad that you gave us some time. I know it's been very busy for you.
My pleasure to be back with you.
This has been, I was going to say it's been a heck of a week, but it's Tuesday. So I feel like the 30 Rock meme, only it's Tuesday instead of Wednesday. Your reaction to what we heard from the premier yesterday and the Minister of Health, they're warning about health system collapse if we don't make significant sacrifices in here, including closing schools, as we deal with the Omicron variant.
Well, they are warning about what we warned already 2 months ago, and then before the holidays, when we plead to the premier to actually clamp down in all the gatherings, in the, you know, shopping spree, etc., so that we could come back and manage this pandemic without closing schools. Instead, what we did, though, is leave everything as normal, and now we need to close schools, which none of us want, but we have no other option. But the next step is even worse, because hospitals are getting already into using Code Orange, which never was intended to be used for staffing issues, and yet they're using it as a sign of desperation. And we are not even at the tip of this, you know, pandemic, of this Omicron rise. So my biggest fear and my colleague's fear is that we will see triage of patients and even of kids if something is not done. This is why, by the way, RNO is asking for moving to step one now. We should not have moved to step two. That's too little, too late. That would have been good before the holidays, but now we need step one. Otherwise, we will see triage, and the premier and the minister can open all the beds they want. We don't have the reins for critical care to take care of the patients, and in other sectors too. So, you know, they say they will use home care to help. Well, they decimated home care. Home care is decimated. There are no RNs almost left in home care. So, you know, you pay the price later on when you don't listen to the experts. And in nursing, we are the experts. With all due respect, the premier and the minister may have an overall knowledge of our profession, but they cannot even mum the word nurse. I mean, did you hear the premier say nurse once? No. He talks about staff. So we may talk with CEOs that speak about the staff, but the reality is the crunch is on nurses and specifically on RNs. You know, Craig, we went to this pandemic with the lowest RN per population in this country, and we warned OHA on and on and on, and the CEOs of hospitals that were replacing RNs right, left, and center, that will happen what happened during SARS, and it was a disaster, except that SARS was short, and here is 23 months already with the virus that has no mercy on anyone. So we are paying the price of hospitals replacing RNs ongoingly, you know, and now we are paying the price that on top of that, 23 months pandemic and a bill, Bill 124, that the premier is stubbornly keeping. He should repeal that bill, and we have said it for quite some time. So he needs to do it now. Otherwise, yes, he's right. There will be a full-blown crisis. A system collapse is crumbling in front of our eyes now. But it's a man-made collapse called Premier Ford because he's stubborn. He doesn't listen to what's urgently needed, which is repeal Bill 124 and move to stage one.
I understand the frustration, certainly, on your part. I want to ask about something the Premier said, which is, hey, we're going to get in a situation where we have not enough nurses to staff hospital wards and ICUs because a lot of nurses are going to be isolating, being off sick. What's the situation with that right now? I know we've seen large numbers of staff here in London, at London Health Science Centre, have to take some time away because they've tested positive for COVID-19. Is there perhaps a shift to the rules is coming? Is that something that you would want to see? How do we handle this?
Shift to the rules will not help because the more you make nurses exhausted, the more they will get sick, whether it is from contracting the virus, you know, Omicron, or because they will break down simply out of exhaustion. So, you know, I mean, they can push all they want. What they need is to push up, not to push down. I call it push up. Push up to the Premier's office. Push up that he repeals Bill 124 to energize nurses, that they are respected, so the energized nurses will give you way more without pushing them to come out of isolation. Push up the CEOs finally to speak up. Have you heard one CEO saying repeal Bill 124? No, because they're all afraid of the Premier. Well, where is the OHA? Is the OHA saying publicly? Publicly. You know, they sent me a letter, which we will put public pretty soon, but they sent a letter saying that they never supported Bill 124. Say it publicly. Don't say it to us. Say it publicly. And the Premier needs to get off his tantrum with Bill 124, repeal Bill 124, energize nurses, thank nurses by the name of their profession, nursing. Don't call them staff. Nurses get offended by that. All staff are important, but the 24/7 are the nurses. You know, RNs, RPNs in long-term care, nurse practitioners. In ICUs, it's RNs, all of them. In critical care, it's RNs, all of them. And that's where the crunch is because we are the lowest RN per population. Again, this was failure by design. By design. Because we warned government on and on and on. Time to act now. Because if not, Ontarians will suffer, and so will my colleagues.
Yeah, and that's clearly, that's not what we want. We don't want nurses to be suffering. We don't want people in this province to be suffering. I think there's a sense of hopelessness a little bit in the province right now. I think a lot of us thought that perhaps we were done with the major COVID shutdowns. I don't think that a lot of us thought that, hey, this thing was just going to, you know, disappear overnight. But a lot of us thought we were kind of done with major COVID shutdowns as vaccination rates continue to get to what they were. And we're happy with those. It could be better, but we're happy with what we've got. But that's just not the case. I think it's difficult for a lot of people. I'm sure it's hard for nurses too, right?
Well, it's very difficult, but it also is, you know, we are a privileged country that ignores what Dr. Tedros from WHO has been saying all along, vaccine equity. Until we don't achieve that, we are not safe. There is a new now variant in France. I don't know how bad it is, you know, or if it will spread worse than Omicron. It seems that it has 47 mutations. This will not stop until we do vaccine equity. And that has to do with the federal government. But here in Ontario, there is something called respect equity. And respect equity means get off your tantrum, Premier, and repeal Bill 124 so you can energize my profession. And my profession, I know, will give all as we have done it all along for 23 months. But the respect needs to start today and cannot continue to wait.
I want to ask you about how patients are interacting with nurses right now. What's it like? What are some of the stories from the front lines as far as what nurses have had to deal with as they interact with the people they're trying to help?
Well, let me say this. First of all, if you look at social media, which we all do these days. The public is super, super in support of nurses. I mean, after the interview that went viral that I did on CDC or other colleagues of mine have done, including my president today, who lives in London, by the way, did a fantastic interview. These interviews are getting, you know, so much appreciation from the public. Patients is a different situation. Many of them are respectful and thankful for the care they receive from nurses. Others, especially when you get people that are anti-vaxxers, you know, they're still very upset that they end up in the hospital. They don't believe that this is because of COVID, and you know all that jazz, right? And that affects, of course, nurses and affects doctors and affects others. You're trying to help people. You know, some of them as they're being intubated. I mean, it breaks my heart. Finally, they say, give me the vaccine. But some of them, even when they're being intubated, the families are being, you know, horrendous. So it's a mix of reactions. And, you know, I mean, not that any nurse will like it, but I'm not going to put the blame, nor will nurses, on the people of Ontario, on patients. We are going to put the accountability where it belongs, which is with the person that runs the show, and that's the premier. And he can do a lot more to ensure that nurses get once again energized as they always were before his bill and this pandemic. And the only way the nurses will get energized is repeal Bill 124, put a huge top up now in compensation until ONA completes negotiations without that bill. Tell he respects nurses, RNs, RPNs, and NPs. Like, say it, right? I mean, how would you react if I tell you, how are you today, reporter? Because I lump you with other reporters. Yeah. Would that feel good?
No, I'd probably want you to use my name or something.
Right? It would feel horrible, right?
Yeah, not good.
I'm saying it today to all the reporters so people can understand. This is what the premier says. Stuff. Stuff. Right? But to doctors, he refers as doctors, and that's what he should do. And to nurses, he should refer as nurses, RNs, RPNs, and NPs. So they feel pride without the bill, with the top-up, and you know what? We all need a boost in the energy arena and in the morale arena, and the premier is not doing it.
So is it fair to say there's a burnout situation then? Is that
absolutely
what you...
Absolutely, okay. There is a burnout. There would be a burnout even without having Bill 124, but that only adds. It's like having a wound and putting salt on it. That's what that bill is. It's a slap in the face. It shows disrespect.
Yeah, I understand absolutely why you feel that way. It's not something that, and it's not something that's applied to some of the other frontline services personnel.
No, well, so. And look, he left the police out, he left firefighters out, he left doctors out, as he should. I mean, we are called essential services. You know that nurses cannot strike, right? I mean, I don't represent the union, but I am a nurse, and I know I'm an RN. Nurses cannot strike because we are essential services. Well, then treat us as essential services. And why did he lump us into this bill? He should not have done the bill, period, to tell you the truth, period. Like, teachers are working very hard, right? And they will continue to do so. And everybody's working very hard in public services, you know, but in the public sector. But, you know, I'm now talking to nurses. It's a critical situation. We are on code orange. This province for everything, almost hospitals are starting to use that as a means of desperation, even though never code orange is for staffing issues, then act accordingly, premier. It's an emergency. Use your emergency powers. Repeal Bill 124. Give a significant double, triple pay to the nurses for the next few months until ONA negotiates the new rates for my colleagues. It's the right thing to do. That's it. It's not a favor.
No, I certainly understand as we sort of navigate our way through a pandemic, we're going to need that frontline staff.
Oh, if not, we will get into triage. And that will be tragic. Triage of people. I mean, yesterday I heard of a person and another one also tweeted of a situation. They went to a hospital with, you know, a cardiac problem. He didn't know what was going on. by the time they triage him, because they figure out that he also has COVID, you know, now they figure out in the hospital if you have COVID, by the time they triage, the person dies. I mean, you know, that's not what we want. That's not what we want. We need to have a system that functions for people that cannot breathe because of COVID, or people that will need the ICUs, because a percentage will definitely need the ICU, and also for people that have other conditions that are critical. If someone comes with chest pain, they need to be seen right away, and it's impossible now.
I'll ask you, is it everyone that's getting burned out? Is it more of the older nurses? Is it the younger nurses or new to the job?
No. I will send you, I am about to tweet, a nurse from pediatrics, ICU nurse, 15 years doing fantastic work, and she simply cannot do it anymore. She wanted to take some time off. They told her no because of the situation, and then she simply quit. I am about to tweet that. I mean, no, it's not. It's the younger nurses, it's the mid-career nurses, it's the older nurses. Look, when you work with the staffing that is twice or three times your regular capacity, you're stretched to a point that you are also concerned about the safety of care you're providing to patients. Nurses working 16-hour shifts, that's not normal.
16 hours.
My president the other day, she's a director of care in a nursing home. She needed to be there 30 hours direct care because she couldn't find an RN. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The situation is grave, and the only way is to start to, at the very least, recognize the situation by the premier and act accordingly. And that's Repeal Bill 124, double, triple, top up the compensation for the next few months, and then ONA basically can negotiate the new fees for nurses. That will at least sent a message that nurses are respected.
Yeah, and nurses should be respected, obviously, especially right now.
Without nurses, you see what's happening. Without nurses, there is no healthcare system, period. There is none. Not in this country and not in others. And that's the other thing. The other thing is how the U.S. is coming and taking our nurses, because if they're not treated well in Ontario, nurses pack and go. You know,
yeah.
Especially if you're young and you don't have yet the obligations here, you just pack and go.
Do you think that getting back to, I know you mentioned phase one earlier, but we're back in phase two right now. Do you think that's going to be enough to stem the tide here? No,
we are for phase one because it's ridiculous that we closed the schools and kept still other things open. Religious events, you know, should be online. Yes, a funeral, I understand, if it's outside, etc. But we really need to get to phase one to do a full circuit breaker, get the nursing profession back in its feet before we start to triage people out of services. And that may include kids. And that's, I mean, adults is tragic. It's going to be a, you know, I don't know. We will be distraught.
That's Doris Grinspun, who is the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, joining us here on the Craig Needles Podcast, which you can subscribe to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever it is you typically get your podcast. You can find us on londonnewstoday.ca as well. Keep listening to us there. Plus, please, if you haven't already, make sure that, like I said, you do subscribe. And you go to our Facebook page as well and follow us that way, which is just the Craig Needles Podcast on Facebook. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, our first of 2022. More analysis about the biggest news stories in London coming up later in the week and later in the year. Glad that you can be with us for our first episode of the year. And we will talk to you on Friday here on the Craig Needles Podcast.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.